Welcome to the Hogan Lovells Litigation Landscape podcast series. These episodes will focus on the legal issues affecting businesses during COVID-19 disruption and beyond. Our team of global lawyers will help you navigate through these challenging times by providing expert insights and practical suggestions, giving you the tools you need to mitigate your risk and ensure stability. Hello and welcome to today's podcast. I'm Arwin Handley, a partner in our London office, and I'm joined today, remotely of course, by my partners Anne Kim from Los Angeles, Jim McGovern based in New York, and Raj Panesar, who's also in London. And today we're focusing on market abuse. We're going to be talking about challenges that companies and regulators are facing in today's climate with regard to market abuse, and why compliance with market abuse rules and regulations should remain on the priority list of in-house legal teams. Although regulators have made announcements about rules and regulations that will be relaxed in light of the COVID-19 pandemic, unsurprisingly, the market abuse rules are not among them. So our starting position is that market abuse rules still need to be complied with. Raj, you had an interesting approach to segmenting the way in which we look at this topic. Can you start by talking about that?
Sure. Thanks a lot, Arwin. So, yeah, I've been thinking about how companies would be behaving in a market like this. And the number of market participants who are going to breach the rules, I think it's just naturally going to rise in a crisis situation, particularly one of this sort when the sheer magnitude of the impact is so severe. So I've been thinking of these market participants, or these particularly the rule breakers, into two segments. And the first are the sheep. These are the folk who are just trying their best to get by, but they're victims of a very difficult situation. These are companies, for example, trying their best with their obligations to publish price-sensitive information to the market or publish their annual reports, but they might be struggling to react as quickly as they're required to. Then at the other end of the spectrum, you have what I've heard one regulator refer to as the wolves. These are the opportunists who are looking to exploit the situation to make money. And to achieve this, they're willing to break the rules.
Right. So how do you see regulators then approaching your first category of market participants?
I think with the first category, the FCA is being and is willing to continue being very patient. It's reiterated the need for companies to continue to publish inside information as soon as possible, like you said. But it understands that companies need time to assess the impact of COVID on its business and to put in place a plan to deal with the effects. And, you know, while in normal times, as soon as possible can mean hours or a few days, in the context of COVID, if you look at the commercial companies in the FTSE 350, if you take the UK lockdown as day one, it's taken an average of about 2 weeks to put out a meaningful trading statement or operations update discussing COVID impacts and the reaction to it. Now, my own view is that that's pretty impressive. Now, the FCA is also focused on the quality of disclosure rather than just speed, which is why it's giving listed companies an extra 2 months to publish their annual reports, and why, when you look at the statements that the FRC and the FCA have been putting out, they're encouraging companies to take the time to work with their auditors to get the information right, rather than just rushing something out which turns out to be flawed.
And I know you've given some thought to the practicalities of this. So what kind of questions should companies be considering when they're determining whether to make an announcement or not?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so I think you can segment these companies into a couple of categories as well. First, you know, are you a company who is in securities offering mode? Remember that your prospectus has to contain all material information. So the due diligence that has to be conducted, it has to be thorough. And this is likely to be a real test of the adequacy of your systems and controls at a time like this. And the deadline for that is really set by the transaction timetable. companies who are offering securities, they need to think about their working capital position and their projections around that. They need to think about what significant change there has been to their performance and financial position since the date of their last financial report. They need to think about their current trading and prospects. And all of that, among other things, needs to be disclosed in their prospectus, whether or not that information is somehow in the public domain. Now, second, you've got companies subject to their ongoing obligations to disclose inside information to the market as soon as possible. They've got a slightly different challenge in that they need to consider, in the European market at least, what the reasonable investor wants to know that isn't already public. That is, you know, what does the company know with the application of its public company quality systems and controls that the market doesn't? That is likely to have a significant impact on the price of its listed securities. And remember, significant is anything more than trivial. And this is price impact upward as well as downward. So if the company isn't, for example, as hard hit as the market seems to think, the company needs to react to that.
Thanks, Raj. Very interesting. Let's turn to the US now. So Anne, you've co-authored an article on some recent interesting pronouncements by the SEC about heightened enforcement risks and companies' disclosures in the present environment. So can you tell us a bit about those?
Of course. Thanks, Arwin. So the SEC has been active in communicating with market participants during the pandemic. On March 23rd, the co-directors of the SEC's enforcement division issued a statement warning market participants about the importance of maintaining market integrity in these uncertain times. The Enforcement Division's co-directors urge public companies to be mindful of Regulation FD and insider trading prohibitions, as rapidly changing market conditions could heighten the risk of violating such laws. They also caution public companies to be mindful of their established disclosure controls and procedures. Then, on April 8th, the SEC's chairman, Jay Clayton, and the SEC's director of the Division of Corporation Finance, William Hinman, issued a joint statement calling on companies to try to make robust forward-looking disclosures that will benefit investors and more broadly promote the wider exchange of companies' plans to respond to the pandemic. While it's difficult for companies to predict what to expect in the future during this pandemic, they encourage companies to provide more information about COVID's potential impact on their future business operations and financial conditions, and to avail themselves of the safe harbor laws, which generally protect companies from liability for certain forward-looking disclosures. I think companies need to be careful, though, to continue to utilize their established disclosure controls and procedures, and to exercise the same good judgment they've used in the past when determining what disclosures to make. A little over a month later, during a May 12th keynote address at an SEC enforcement forum, Steve Peakin, co-director of the Enforcement Division, stated that the Enforcement Division formed a coronavirus steering committee to coordinate the Enforcement Division's response to COVID-related misconduct and highlighted the following issues that the Enforcement Division will be focused on: insider trading, market manipulation, financial statement and issuer disclosure fraud, and improper marketing and sale of complex structured products to retail investors by regulated entities such as investment advisors and investment companies. With regard to financial statement and issuer disclosure fraud, Mr. Peakin highlighted that not only are they looking for issuers who are engaged in improper conduct due to COVID's impact on a company's financial condition, but also on pre-existing accounting or disclosure improprieties that are exposed because of the pandemic. In terms of what the steering committee is doing to detect accounting and issuer disclosure frauds, Mr. Peakin stated that they have developed a systematic process to review public filings from issuers in highly impacted industries, and that they are focused on looking at whether an issuer's disclosures appear to be out of line with other issuers in the same industry. They are also looking for disclosures, impairments, or valuations that may attempt to disguise previously undisclosed problems or weaknesses by casting them as issues related to the pandemic.
So as regards the UK, Raj mentioned he thought FCA, you know, would be patient, would allow some leeway to companies who are doing their best to comply with their obligations to disclose inside information where the future is so uncertain. Do you think the SEC will be similarly understanding of firms who might be caught off guard by developments which they hadn't anticipated?
So let me just start off by noting a slight difference between the U.S. regime from the U.K. regime regarding immediate disclosure of all inside information. While the SEC requires companies to make periodic reports, both quarterly and year-end, on forms 10Q and 10K, it also requires prompt disclosure about a large number of specific events on what they call current reports or on forms 8K or 6K for foreign issuers. Unlike the UK requirement, the SEC does not require issuers to report all material events. So turning to the question you had about the SEC providing leeway for companies during the pandemic, I don't think that companies should expect the SEC to look the other way or provide companies with protection from investigations or prosecution because of the pandemic. While Chairman Clayton and Director Hinman's April 8th statement mentioned that they would not expect the SEC would second guess a company's good faith attempt to provide investors and other market participants appropriately framed forward-looking information, companies should be wary that this means that the SEC would look the other way if a company issued forward-looking statements that did not have a reasonable basis. There is a potential that companies could face both SEC scrutiny and private litigation if they issue forward-looking statements without a reasonable basis, and therefore those statements can be viewed as false or misleading.
Thanks, Anne. So why don't we move on to the second category, market participants who are out in the market trying to make a profit. What happens if, for whatever reason, they cross the line, whether that's by insider dealing or market manipulation, etc.? I've been thinking about the UK position and in particular what the FCA Enforcement Division's approach to this second category would be. And I think the answer is actually fairly clear. There's a very strong policy reason in the current environment for the Enforcement Division to be taking a very strict line on this and to be actively and promptly looking into behaviour which might constitute market abuse and then, you know, afterwards following up with enforcement action or criminal investigations where they suspect market abuse has taken place. So in their early lockdown statements, the FCA made it clear that they were continuing to monitor for market abuse and would take action if necessary. And they have the tools to do this. They receive a vast amount of trading and transaction data on a daily basis and are actively monitoring this data. And this data obviously isn't their only source of intelligence. Firms which suspect market abuse must report this to the FCA, and that'll be either under the store regime or under their Principle 11 obligations of cooperation. And there's also a very real possibility that the FCA could receive tip-offs from whistleblowers. The FCA themselves have said they are expecting an increase in cases. Mark Stewart, the Director of Enforcement and Market Oversight, said FCA was getting ready for an increase in market abuse cases in the coming months. And he singled out as drivers for this. First, the likely increase in inside information about capital raisings, and second, the likely increase in inside information about company results. So both things that Raj obviously has mentioned already. So insider dealing is clearly going to be a focus for the FCA. And when looking at that, I'd expect them to be looking at concurrent criminal and regulatory investigations. Mark Stewart has confirmed that the Enforcement Division is still functioning. It's still able to investigate cases. It can receive and review documents. It can process electronic data. It's still conducting interviews with witnesses and victims. Although whether interviews with suspects can proceed remotely is, I think, still up for debate. So his declared modus operandi to date has been to open lots of investigations and then close them if there are no grounds for taking action. This has certainly led to a backlog in progressing investigations, but it looks like this approach will continue to be maintained by the FCA during COVID-19. So that's some thoughts on the UK position. What about the US? Let's start with a live example. Jim, I've read reports that the DOJ are investigating the trading of some US legislators. What's all that about?
Well, in the time of COVID, it appears that the first big enforcement action involving securities fraud in the United States comes from our highest levels of government. It's an investigation that started toward the end of March of this year, just when the US was dealing with questions about whether the government should shut down, whether the economy should shut down to combat the coronavirus. It came out during that period of time that four United States senators who had been exposed to intelligence briefings on the potential problems associated with combating the COVID virus had actually engaged in substantial stock trading activity after having attended a particular intelligence briefing. Those senators was Senator Loeffler and Senators Feinstein and Imhoff, and a senator by the name of Richard Burr from North Carolina. Three of the four senators were able to point to the fact that either they hadn't attended the briefing that supposedly contained the bad information, and others, another two of the senators were able to say that their stock trading activity is done independent of them. The current focus is on Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina, who apparently traded in approximately $1.7 million worth of stocks after having attended the briefing. Interestingly, Senator Burr is now being pursued under something called the Stock Act of 2012, which was a insider trading act that was used to enforce the securities laws against members of Congress. He was one of only three senators to vehemently oppose the passage of that act, and now he appears to be falling victim to that act. By early April, he had stepped down as the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, and his problems seemed to stem from the public statements that he was making about the Trump administration's efforts to address the coronavirus epidemic, while in private, he was making statements comparing the coronavirus epidemic to potentially the Spanish flu that killed more than 600,000 people in the United States in 1917. Currently, his case seems to be rocking and rolling, despite the fact that everybody is working remotely. The FBI just executed a search warrant on his cell phone, and it's been very public about who will be prosecuting him in the future. So we have really kicked it off here well in the United States on the issue of securities fraud in the insider trading space.
Yeah, absolutely. The DOJ got onto that one very quickly. Do you think that's indicative of the way they'll approach insider dealing cases generally during the pandemic?
Well, certainly the senator's case is one where they understood there would be a great deal of public outcry asking for an investigation and prosecution of the leaders of the government taking the information they get by virtue of their intelligence briefings and making favorable stock trades as a result of that. But we can definitely see that the issue of insider trading and of other types of manipulation is a matter of major importance for the SEC and the DOJ. And we've noticed in our practice that that while there was early on a sort of pause in enforcement efforts, that those enforcement efforts have picked up dramatically since the beginning of this sort of lockdown that we're experiencing here in the United States. We routinely are getting inquiries from the DOJ and the SEC about potential statements made by companies and other sorts of transactions.
So one of the areas that is always of interest to companies based outside of the US is the risks for them, companies that are not trading on US exchanges, of having to face a US governmental inquiry or investigation. What's that looking like at the moment?
I think if you look at the area of securities enforcement in the United States, there's been something that many writers have spoken about, the Morrison myth. And so there was this case of great notoriety in the United States, Morrison, that basically said, where the Supreme Court said that that individual stockholders cannot sue a corporation that is traded on a foreign exchange in the United States seeking relief. And so that gave foreign issuers and foreign companies that were traded on stock exchanges outside the United States a great deal of comfort that their public statements and other practices may not be scrutinized as heavily as companies that are traded in the United States. But what we're seeing lately, and particularly with efforts from the fraud section out of the Department of Justice, is an effort to apply the U.S. laws extraterritorially. which is what Morrison said that the government was not permitted to do. What I think a lot of foreign companies and foreign issuers have overlooked is that the 2010 Dodd-Frank law, which was put in place just after the Morrison decision came down, actually reinstated the SEC and the Department of Justice's ability to enforce the securities laws in an extraterritorial nature. So what we're seeing right now are perhaps prosecutors sitting at home reading the newspaper or reading foreign newspapers, if that may be the case, and finding cases where maybe they would have been overlooked in the past, but now industrious prosecutors are out there looking for new cases. And what we're seeing is an interest in false statements or misrepresentations and omissions that are being made by foreign companies that are traded on a foreign exchange, yet have a substantial amount of investors in the United States. And so they're using the Dodd-Frank rules to now pursue foreign companies that are traded on foreign exchanges that are largely affecting foreign investors. But because the conduct or the effects of those malfeasances are having an effect on U.S. Stockholders, they're using the Dodd-Frank law now to pursue securities fraud charges and allegations against these foreign companies, which is a very interesting development, I think grown out in large part out of the fact that prosecutors are now focusing more on sort of research than maybe doing just interviews.
Thanks, Jim. That's a sobering thought. Anne, what about the SEC? How are they going to approach the investigation of market abuse cases in these very volatile markets?
So the SEC has made numerous public announcements that they are focused on rooting out any fraud associated with COVID-19. The co-directors of the Enforcement Division noted that they are committing substantial resources to ensure Main Street investors are not victims of fraud or illegal practices during the pandemic. The SEC's tips, complaints, and referrals portal is active even though most of its staff is working from home. Since mid-March to approximately mid-May, the SEC reported that they received 35% more TCRs, or tips, complaints, and referrals, over the same period in 2019. During that same period, the SEC reported that it has opened approximately 400 new matters under inquiry. I think once the SEC office is reopened, we will start to see many new investigations or inquiries related to the pandemic. Although they are currently pursuing those cases, I think once the office is fully reopened, you'll see a huge uptick in those types of cases.
Thanks, Anne. So I think the message generally is expect a lot more activity from regulators in this space going forward. I think we could probably talk about this topic for hours, but we need to draw it to a close. So thank you, Anne and Jim and Raj, for your insights. It's been an extremely interesting discussion. If anyone listening would like to discuss anything we've raised here further, please just do get in touch. You can find all our details on the Hogan Lovells website. Until then, thanks for listening. Take care and stay safe, everyone.
If you're interested in any of the issues raised during this podcast, we can help. Please speak to your Hogan Lovells contact or visit our website, HoganLovells.com.